Thanks for tuning to Digital Voices Podcast, where we chat digital transformation, challenges and opportunities across healthcare and life sciences. And now, your host, Ed Marks. Hey, listeners. Just wanted to remind you to register for the Digital Voices Conference on Thursday, June 17th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Registration is free, and we can't wait to see you there. Now back to the podcast.
Welcome to Digital Voices. So excited today to introduce you to my guest. We are going to talk digital voices from the perspective of tech, digital, and a data partner. So oftentimes our guests are patients, our providers, our payers, pharma, but sometimes we really want to look at it from the tech and digital data partner side. And there's no company better and no person better than to speak with GE Healthcare CDO, Amit. And so Amit, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here, by the way. Thank you.
Yeah, I know we connected early on, you know, maybe, I say early on, like a year ago, but early on for me coming to Tech Mahindra, so working with someone like a GE, and we both had this common passion for digital transformation. And of course, you know, I looked you up and found out all the cool things that you were doing, which we're going to talk about, and some of your background. And then you helped me pioneer this organization for CDOs. So it's a very light organization called Digital Voices. Actually, we stole the name on the podcast, or Digital Health. And we formed this with 13 other healthcare CDOs, some from the provider, payer, again, side, and life sciences. And we are putting on, we put on one conference last year, which was really popular. It was in November, again, Digital Health, Digital Voices. And then we are having one come up June 17th, and you're actually one of our featured speakers. So really excited about that. So we just want to jump right in. The only thing I'll say, because I'll let you sort of share your own journey, is that Amit has an amazing career, first with Cisco. So that's a whole career in and of itself. And now with GE Healthcare, you have 20 patents. So at some point, I'm going to ask you to tell us about one or two of them, because I'm very, very curious. But before we go there, the same question we ask all our guests, what's your favorite music?
Oh, okay. That's a tough one. But, you know, mine is, you know, Indian classical music, and I hear quite a bit of that. I grew up hearing Indian classical. I actually, my parents tried to teach me classical music. So I went to a classical music school, and I knew that it was not my passion, right? But I was doing it for because my parents wanted to do it. But I used to learn harmonium, and I used to learn some classical vocal singing and all of that. And I never really got it, actually, frankly. But I ended up listening to a lot of music, okay, Indian classical music to begin with, as I was growing up, and it sort of stayed with me. And then, obviously working with Cisco, got a lot more exposure to the Western world, traveled a lot and so on and so forth, and started, you know, sort of listening to some Western music too.
Yeah.
I've listened to many singers, but John Legend is my sort of current favorite.
Yeah.
I would say when it comes to Western music, but I don't claim to be very knowledgeable about Western music, frankly. I just like listening to it.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And that's the first time we had Indian classical as an answer, so I'm going to have to look that up. Of course, I'm familiar with Bollywood and some other traditional Indian music, but that's great. What about your passion, or, you know, you already referenced passion, that it wasn't music. What is your passion or life message, or, you know, sort of the rules that you live by?
So look, I grew up in India, and I would sort of share this. My dad was extremely strict, and he was a disciplinarian, and he was very religious, right? And he sort of introduced me to some, you know, some basic sort of disciplines in life. And I would say, obviously initially I protested, right? I didn't really like what he was, you know, what he was asking me to do consistently. But I really truly found value in it over a period of time. And what I learned is, apart from some meditation and things like that he taught me to do, which I continue to do every day. But what is really taught me is the value of consistency. Okay.
Yeah.
And I feel that it is, you know, people say it, but it is very hard to do anything very consistently over a long period of time. And I would like you to reflect, you know, what is that one thing that you've done over 30 years or 40 years without fail, apart from breathing and eating and, you know,
right,
all of that stuff. By the way, that's not done by you. It's done by the body, and it's not, it's,
right,
it happens even irrespective of you not wanting to do it. So it is very hard. You know, I have given small experiments to my team, and I'll tell you one, right, just to illustrate the point. I've actually told my team that I want them to pick a time in a day, you know, sit in one place and breathe cautiously, deeply 4 times, inhale at a count of 6, retain the breath at the count of 7 or 8, and exhale at a higher count than that, right?
Yeah.
The only thing you have to do it for 21 days. Same time, same place, 21 days.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, 95 plus people out of 100 have not been able to do it.
Yeah.
In general, right? They never can do it for 21 days for some reason or the other. I mean, you know, it's like all sorts of reasons why you cannot do. And by the way, this is as simple as just breathing 4 times.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
So that's really my message. I mean, I've really lived by it. I try to do things consistently, right? And I see what I am able to sustain, because, you know, when you are able to sustain something, it's meant for you, and it, you know, you can do something more constructively over a period of time.
That's really good. You know, let's talk about meditation for a second. And, you know, it's been rebranded a little bit, and I think it's good if it helps someone adopt it, you know, in terms of mindfulness. So something very similar concept, mindfulness. So, because I think this will be interesting. So let me kind of take a side here with us. So my challenge, and I love the whole consistency thing. That's brilliant. So you've challenged me. I'm going back now and trying to think what I've done consistently, you know, for a period of 20, 30 years. On meditation, so my challenge had been, so I'm going to ask you a question about where and how you do it, is I, especially now with COVID, I would try to have my time of reflection and meditation in my office, but I found that does not work for me. So, because I'll come in the office and I have this natural propensity, right? Check my email. I'm in my office, there's my computer. I got to see what's going on. And that destroys any sort of consistency for me. What would you say to someone listening who probably like me says, yeah, he's, Amit's right on that. You got to do that. Do you go to a different place in your house? It's the same time, and I imagine the same time and place all the time.
Yeah, you know, so first of all, I think there's a lot of misconception about meditation, right? It looks like you need to do something specific. I mean, meditation is anything. I mean, including music, by the way. You could just meditate on music. So it depends on what you resonate with, right?
Yeah.
And where you can actually focus your thoughts for a longer period of time, right? And that's what it is. But to your specific question, I think it does help identifying a space. And it is more for discipline and for anything else. It is not like, you know, if you sit there, you will be able to meditate. If you don't sit there, you will not be able to meditate. But it just sort of makes you give up everything else and go there and then, you know, sort of focus on a particular activity, right? So from that perspective, it does help. I have tried to do this very early in the morning. So I generally get up around 4 o'clock, and I have sort of, you know, talked to my EA and really incentivized her to keep my time free in the morning for some time, right?
Yes.
Because it becomes much harder if you don't do that. It helps keeping your phone away. It helps keeping all other distractions away, right?
Yeah. So
whatever you may be getting distracted with. But so those simple things, and the value of doing it very early in the morning is that you don't have other people, you know, up at that time, and, you know, there are no otherwise distractions.
Yeah.
Okay? So it doesn't.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Yeah, and to your point, I block my schedule like 5 to 8. In the morning, and it says no meetings unless absolutely critical.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that way I can have my time of meditation. I can get some work done, exercise, whatever else I need to do. But yeah, I try to do the same, because if you don't carve out the time and set it aside, as you know, something will take its place. So
I'll say one thing though. I mean, and by the way, I've talked about this to a number of people and they asked me similar questions. I want everyone to understand that, you know, even when you meditate or do whatever, right? I mean, you can you can recite on a particular name, or, you know, there are many techniques, right?
Right.
It does not work every single day. It does not. Okay. And I think you should be okay with that. You know, don't give up because of it. That's
right.
One.
Yes.
So it is very important to continue. Even if you feel, oh, well, you know, I'm really completely distracted and I'm not, what am I doing here, sitting here? Anyway, my thoughts are going all over the place. It's still important to spend that time. And many, some days it doesn't work. And in some days you'll find that you focus really, really well. And that's okay. I think that's a very natural thing.
Yeah. It goes back to your whole concept of consistency. All right. Now, I think it's very interesting. I know we're talking digital transformation. We're speaking to our peer CDOs and those who serve with them. But I think that's something that's really practical, and we don't talk about it very much. So that's why I thought it's worth the segue there to go there. So tell us a little bit. Well, we already know a little bit about you now personally, based on your answers already, but your sort of personal professional journey. Like, so you obviously were born and raised in India, and, you know, but now you're in the United States. So just tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah. So look, you know, again, brought up in India, studied there, you know, started working there, by the way. All my initial career was in embedded systems, operating systems and system software area. Related to communications technologies, right? So worked for the Tata Group, worked for Cisco. I was the first employee Cisco recruited in India in 1999.
Wow.
And I grew with them. It was a great stint. It's a very good company, as is GE Healthcare. I really enjoyed working there, you know, built a very strong team. When I left, I was a site leader for Cisco in India. 11,200 people totally on the site, but I had a direct team of about 3,500, 4,000 people. But more importantly, a product responsibility for almost $12 billion of products, you know, for Cisco executed out of India. So we had sort of really created a, you know, very strong team. And, you know, I really look back at that and say, wow, you know, more than the products, it is the team that was valuable. Almost all of them are still there, and they're just absolutely phenomenal guys there. So spent 15 years with Cisco. In October 2016, I got this call, and this happens to many of us, right? Sometimes this is a number, I don't recognize it, you know. Sometimes you pick these calls, sometimes you don't, right? And
right, yeah.
this was late evening India time. And I happened to pick it up, right? We had a conversation about 5-7 minutes, and I had to interrupt this person and say, you know, sorry, but I think you seem to have called the wrong guy, right? Or the wrong person.
Right.
Because I had no plans or no dream to get to the US, absolutely not, right? I was very happy with Cisco at that time. And the person said, well, this position is healthcare. Right. And I said, okay, hold on. I do not know anything about this space. And the last thing he says is, well, you know, before we proceed, I just want to let you know that this position is in Milwaukee. And believe me, I mean, I was on my iPhone. I actually had to open, you know, Google Maps and look at where Milwaukee is. I did not know
right.
that this. And I did make a mistake, because on Google Maps, I saw this as a small dot around Chicago. So I thought this is a suburb of Chicago anyways, right? So I continued the conversation. It turned out to be a phenomenal conversation. I talked to the entire GE leadership team at that time, including Jeff Immelt, who was still the CEO of GE. And it was a digital transformation role, right? That's what they were looking at. But it was interesting, because while I was going through every conversation, it took about a month or maybe 3 weeks. After every conversation, I had to say, oh, this is moving. And, you know, what am I going to do about this? You know, because I not really thought about moving to the US. But anyways, I think eventually I you know, the role was phenomenal. I decided to take it. My elder daughter was studying. She's now a doctor, but she was in the third year of her medical course, and we did not move her. So I my wife and my youngest daughter moved here to Milwaukee. And I must tell you this now, reflecting back 4 years back, that as much as moving from communications and networking to healthcare was a challenge, moving from Bangalore to Milwaukee was a bigger challenge, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. So it was, but the journey with GL Care has been phenomenal. I mean, I'll talk a little bit more about that. It turned out to be exactly what, you know, GE Healthcare wanted me to do, and the way they described the role. I joined as CTO of Imaging and then took over the Chief Digital Officer role about 3 years back. Conceptualized the Edison platform.
Yeah.
And we've had a great journey with it. But I also run a close to a $1.2, $1.3 billion P&L on our, you know, sort of digital applications business overall for the company. So overall, it's turned out to be gold. Okay. But I must say that it was probably one of the most difficult transitions I ever did.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. You know, it's a not only a change of companies, a change of industry, change of role, and of course the cultural change, right? Moving so far, you know, it's not like moving from Canada to the United States. It's much more different. So, no, that's really interesting. What are maybe one or two things, Amit, that you brought with you from Cisco, so like a non-healthcare thing into healthcare, because sometimes we talk about how healthcare may not be as advanced as other industries, and maybe communications industry is more advanced. Were there one or two things that you were able to bring with you that helped sort of improve things or change things into healthcare?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I came from a digital and a software background, so obviously that experience, you know, certainly helped. But I think, you know, looking back, I do feel that I was able to apply a number of systems engineering and systems design concepts to what I'm doing at GE Healthcare, because these are pretty domain independent, right? I mean, if you're good at systems, you're good at systems irrespective of which vertical you are in. Obviously, the value of the teams and value of the talent, you know, that, you know, I saw it at play at Tata's as well as at Cisco. So I brought that up. The other thing that I used to run obviously large platform teams also at Cisco. And running platforms is a very challenging job in general, right?
Yeah.
Because companies get very excited about it, you know, and they end up funding it. And then 2 to 3 years down the line, they start losing patience on it, right? Because the CFO looks at you and says, okay, what is this platform stuff, right? When is the revenue going to come in?
Yes.
So it becomes very challenging. And what I had learned is you have to be careful and not do the platform to an extent where it sort of becomes difficult for the company to digest it, right? And the basic principle I had was you need to first put a good architecture in place, but you don't necessarily need to realize the entire architecture, right? So I think the steps that I had learned was have a good architecture in place as number one. Two, go find actual business problems to solve. You can call them use cases. And then three, you realize those use cases by realizing parts of the architecture. And then you sort of build out the architecture,
right,
with the use cases so that you actually get to market much quicker. So with the Edison platform, we were in market in less than 18 months of the first time we got funding to do the platform, right? Which obviously has helped, because I can see what would have happened if I had taken 3 years instead of 18 months.
Right, yeah.
To hit the market. And it's not a problem with the companies or the CFOs. It's just real, right? I mean, you're not seeing anything.
Yes. Tangible.
While you build it out. So I think that was a very important learning that I had from Cisco that I was able to apply. The second thing is, look, you know, and this may resonate with some of the people who are in the healthcare industry. you have to abstract things out a little bit. And when you look at a scanner, you abstract it, you realize that it's a probe at the end of the day, right?
Right.
It is a complicated probe, and it's a heavy machine and all of that. And then you sort of look around you and look at the networking world, and your Wi-Fi is a probe too, right?
Yes, right.
It's just a different type of probe, essentially. But it helps you think through the architectures and how things will evolve over a period of time, right?
Yeah.
Because, and I'm pretty sure about this, that over time, the devices are going to get simplified and the intelligence gets more and more, either on the edge or in data center, cloud, you know, whatever you may call it, but tends to get aggregated, right, at different points. And the device has to get simplified over time or has to get more sophisticated, but at the same cost and complexity. Okay, so you can apply many of these principles, okay, irrespective of the industry, I guess, but they've definitely helped me from the experience, right?
Yeah, no, those are really, really good, very strong. I'm taking lots of notes, actually, because, you know, I'm responsible for a platform as well, and I know of what you speak. So that's great. Were there any, like, maybe one aha moment, like, coming over to healthcare, like something that you didn't expect, or a big new learning?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, healthcare is different in a way because of its regulatory framework, right? And, you know, to be frank with you, initially, I looked at it as a wall coming at me because, you know, huge headwind, right? I mean, I couldn't move fast enough because of the regulatory framework. But then over time, you start appreciating why that's so much essential, right? Because you're dealing with patients and patient safety. And you can do, I mean, if you don't do things well, you can do a lot of harm, right? So you start appreciating it. But that was certainly one of the sort of big ahas when I got into it. I'd heard of it, right? But when I actually started working in that environment, it was very different from what I thought it would be, right?
Right.
And that certainly was an aha. The second thing is I was also actually taken aback a little bit about how much data actually exists in the healthcare companies as well as in the system in general.
True.
And it's phenomenal, right? I mean, it's actually very massive amounts of data that already exist, and it continues to grow, obviously, right?
Yes. Yeah, you know, what I heard on the regulatory side was healthcare is the second most regulated industry after nuclear industry. Uh-huh. I mean, so we all know in our audience, it's highly, highly regulated, and there's good reasons why. So you're seeing a lot, you know, in your position, I mean, you see a lot of other healthcare organizations, hospitals or payers, and a lot of probably pretty cool innovations or transformations. Is there maybe one example, we don't have to name the organization, but of a really forward-thinking entity, you know, or a customer, you know, about something that they're doing that might be novel or, you know, really interesting?
I think lots of things, right? Because right now, because of the pandemic, obviously, there's a massive acceleration of change.
Yes.
You know, through the healthcare industry in the way the healthcare delivery is actually made. But and I won't name the company, and I'm sure that many of you are seeing this already. But look, there is obviously a massive push towards virtualization and distribution of care delivery models. So that's one. But what I'm finding interesting is, you know, people are a lot more open now to use technology, okay? And I'm seeing this on the payer side too, as well as on the provider side, to use technology even to a point of going at risk, you know, with respect to payments and, you know, things like that,
yeah,
between the payers and providers. And I think it's pretty interesting, right? Because I recently was talking to one of the providers who said, well, we have a cohort of almost 25,000 patients, and we're working with the payers and getting into a risk arrangement with this cohort of 25,000 patients, right? And what it means essentially is we need to be a lot more proactive because the payer is saying, okay, fine, you know, go at risk and manage these patients
right,
better, and we can save some money, and, you know, that's your monetization model. But that then sort of opens the door for the providers to be a lot more aggressive with, you know, how they could potentially monitor patients using technology, and how do you apply data and analytics and AI a lot more effectively. And you're not necessarily restricted, you know, by the specific care pathways that you may already be operating, because you can sort of look at social determinants of health, you can look at social data, you can look at data coming in from wearables, and they can combine all of that with, you know, whatever is happening from a health system perspective, because your end goal is keep this patient well, right? And look at the, and try and, you know, sort of avoid an episode. Okay.
Yes.
Because that's success, that becomes a success criteria, right?
Essentially. Yes.
And I think it's a pretty creative thing, just thinking about how this will evolve in future. Okay. How healthcare delivery and what will be valuable. And we can say value-based care and things like that. But essentially, my sense is that where this is headed eventually is that there's going to be a significant incentive, okay, to manage patients upstream, right?
Yes.
And get early into detection, you know, therapies, outcomes, and so on and so forth, rather than letting the disease progress and then trying to cure the disease. So there's definitely going to be a push towards that. Now, the pace of it, right, how much it happens,
yeah,
it also depends on the monetization models. But this whole at-risk really sort of intrigued me, because I think that will really push the envelope, you know, upstream, basically.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah, we're seeing the lines between traditional payers and providers really start to blend. You know, they call it payviders or what have you. You see many examples right now in the industry of the two coming together or crossing what normally would have been different boundaries. But I, you know, and I'm sure you feel the same way, whatever's best for the patient, you know, in our countries, you know, population health, the wellness of our citizens, that's what's really important. So let's talk really quick about Edison. I'm very fascinated. I've seen you present on it before. Can you give our audience just, you know, maybe a 1 minute, if that's possible, a 1 minute primer on Edison and sort of what it does and how it can be of benefit?
Well, actually, you know, when we were thinking about this was 3 years back, I was really trying to see how is it that we can actually get the devices, you know, on a different trajectory, right, from an innovation perspective. And it became very clear that you can't solve the problem inside the device. You need to solve the problem outside the device. So, you know, that's how we came up with this concept of the edge, and, you know, it became Edison. And now we've obviously taken it to cloud, so it's pretty pervasive, you know, and flexible. But there are three things that I would say. First, it connects everything, including the devices. So there is a deep connection into the devices. There is also a horizontal connection into the health systems, PACS, VNA, EHRs, so on and so forth. Second, it uses those connections to ingest data, right, and aggregates it. So and this is never going to be fully done, right? Because this is a journey.
Yeah.
But we are in the process of aggregating different types of information. And then you need to get insights out of that information, right? So you need a set of tools around it, or set of services around the data. You know, you need AI tools. You need tools to build AI. You need tools to inference AI. You need orchestration mechanisms. You need maybe advanced visualization, you know, mechanisms. And then you just need the whole platform aspects, right? The lifecycle management, can I upgrade it remotely? Can I monitor it remotely? Is it really using the latest and greatest technology stacks and Kubernetes environment, microservices? Cybersecurity is a big, you know.
Yeah, of course, yes.
Big issue, right? So you build, so what we did is we built all these building blocks, right? So you have, you know, first you connect everything, you ingest data, and then you provide building blocks so that you can process the data through a pipeline to try and create workflows and applications on top while managing the lifecycle. So that's really Edison.
Yeah.
Thanks. Now we have taken it to cloud, we can cluster it with data center and cloud so that you can have deployment flexibility in terms of applications. But that's really what it is in a nutshell. This is a topic that I can talk for hours.
Yeah, Yeah, and it's not meant to be a commercial for you at all, but it really, because it's very innovative, and it's a whole new way of thinking and providing a service, and that's why I wanted to talk about it. It's really impressive what you've done and how you've architected it. So I think I'm always looking to the partner ecosystem to be that partner to help innovate and help push digital transformation, and this goes right along with it. So
just one quick comment. So since you mentioned partner ecosystem, that was a very early decision we made, which is every building block that we build, we're going to open it up through APIs, and we are actually creating partner ecosystems, right? So I have an accelerator that I created in Bangalore 2 years back. I have an accelerator running in China, and we just kicked off an accelerator in Europe. And then we have at least 21, I don't have an accelerator, but we have about 21, 22 companies here in the US whom we have onboarded on the platform. Yeah. So that is a very important aspect of any platform, I think, that the whole ecosystem piece of
I love it, because that's what's been missing in healthcare and why we're a little bit further behind. That's just my opinion, is our lack of exchange and interoperability. And so, the way you have architected and allowing for those accelerators and partner ecosystem, I think is the right thing for our communities, our patients, and so forth. I know we're running short on time, so maybe one last question, and let's keep going down that route of partner. So let's define partner in this case, not as another tech company, but as a health system or a payer. What is a good way? Because again, this is a question that many people have. And when I was a CIO and a lot of my peers, so I was big into partnerships. So I would approach GE and say, how can we do something really special, really big together? What have you found is a great way for, again, other organizations, hospitals or provider payers to partner with someone like a GE? What's the best route of going around that?
So look, first of all, we are very keen. So you're going to find a willing partner, which is which is very important in partnerships. Second, I think it always has helped us if we know that we are going after a particular use case, because there's something tangible that you can achieve between the two parties, right?
Yes.
And that gives a lot of focus in terms of how we drive the activities, because sort of success feeds on itself, right? So if you see something working, even on a small scale, the tendency is to then try and expand that, right? So that really helps the partnerships over a period of time. So look, we are partnering right now with pharma companies. We obviously partner with a number of healthcare providers, right? That's our core business. But apart from the equipment business that we do, I think there's a tremendous amount of collaboration happening in the AI space, in workflows, and sort of application orchestration area. But making sure that there is an initial target that you want coming together to achieve is very important, rather than saying, well, let's just build a partnership and then we'll figure out what we solve for, because that becomes a little bit of a challenge from a direction perspective. The second thing is, what I also found is it's easier to stitch together a technology partnership. It becomes much harder to convert that into a business relationship, right?
Yes.
So some early thinking around that as to, how you will go to market and what is the business structure that you're willing to put together as two companies or partners is a very important early consideration, because a number of partnerships actually sort of falter at the transition between technology and business.
Yeah.
So important to sort of keep that in mind.
Yeah, you're right. When we were, I won't name the organizations, but I was part of some fantastic organizations. And when we would try to build partnerships with other fantastic organizations, we always were struck by the fact there weren't many models out there of successful partnerships, because of the reasons you cited. So you really have to think about it holistically, not just because it's two great brands coming together, but really what is the precise purpose? What are you trying to solve? And then how do you, from a business perspective, really make that work and everyone benefits? And again, at the end of the day, that our patients benefit and our clinicians. So it's a little harder than it appears, but it can be done.
for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Amit, this has been fantastic. I'm going to leave you with the last word. If there's anything that we didn't cover that you want to take a minute to talk about, or anything that you want to double down on that we discussed.
No, I would just say, Ed, you know, this initiative that you are driving, you know, getting the CDOs together, I think it's phenomenal. I've seen tremendous traction on it. It's really required in the industry at this point in time. So a huge thank you to you, and thanks for having me here today.
Yeah, fantastic. You're a great person, as well as a technologist, but person first. And I really appreciate the conversation today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey there, I'm Daniel, one of the producers of this podcast. I'm usually not on the mic except for that awesome intro and outro, but I wanted to take a quick second to invite you to this year's Digital Voices Conference. Last year, I attended Digital Voices, and what I learned helped me level up in my career, my understanding of digital care, and impress my boss. This year's conference features chief digital officers from GE, Zoom, and Anthem. These are the foremost leaders in the space when it comes to digital healthcare. The conference is 100% virtual, so you don't have to mess with travel or PTO. Just log in at the time of the show. Digital Voices 2021 will be on Thursday, June 17th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and registration is 100% free. Just go to digitalvoices.com. That's DGTLvoices.com to register. Thanks again for listening.
Hi, this is John Lynn from the Healthcare IT Today podcast. If you like the latest rumors, insights, and happenings in healthcare IT, you'll enjoy hearing my colleague Colin Hung and myself debate and share the latest happenings from the world of healthcare IT. Find the latest episodes or dig into our archive at healthcareittoday.com or search for Healthcare IT Today on your favorite podcast application or YouTube. When it comes to healthcare technology, we love this stuff, and we can't wait to have you join in on the discussion of everything health IT.
Thank you for listening to Digital Voices Podcast with Ed Martin. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe on your preferred streaming service and leave a rating and review. And most importantly, thanks again for listening.